Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Amazing Avenue audio listeners. Welcome to our brand new show. This is officially episode one, even though we had our, I'll call it the soft opening, shortly before opening day. But this is a pod of their own, a new show by the women of Amazing Avenue. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined by my two lovely co-hosts. Introduce yourselves, ladies.
I'm Maggie Wiggin, also on Amazing Avenue.
And I'm Linda Servich, also on Amazing Avenue.
Beautiful. So this week, we will start off by getting our overall first impression of the Mets. They have played four games so far, and they are in the midst of their fifth one, winning as we speak, I still think. Right, Linda?
Yes, they are.
Still winning. Great. And, you know, they've only played one series plus one game, and so can't overreact to four or five games, but, you know, and can't even react.
We can overreact, and we will overreact.
This especially is... when it comes to Big Pete.
Yeah, let's be real. This is Mets Twitter, so we'll overreact a little bit. And, you know, but can't read too much into the start of the season, as we know from last season, but we can't help but get excited anyway. So, Maggie, how do you feel about this team so far?
I mean, it's been really fun to watch, and I feel like four and a half games in, that's sort of the best you can hope for, is that everything has been fun. all I can think of is 11-1 from last year, and part of me really hopes we don't get to 11-1 because that will forever be like a cursed value. But yeah, I mean, it's fun to see the young guys playing really well for the most part, and some other bats sort of coming around. The pitching has been solid, especially the bullpen, which we'd all hoped. But yeah, it's just fun baseball. More fun. Yay, fun.
I like fun. Big Pete is fun, you guys.
Yeah, and I kind of agree. Like, even if they do go 11-1, it still has a different vibe than last year. Like, obviously, we were all having fun last year, but now it's, you have like the young guys. You have McNeil playing. You have Alonso playing. You know, Rosario's coming into his own. So even if they do like kind of replicate what they did last year, I feel better about it because like the future is kind of rounding into form now, instead of, oh, we have Adrian Gonzalez at first base, who we hope doesn't fall apart. Like, here it seems
thanks,
like
Linda.
There's more
I'd forgotten
of a plan.
About Adrian Gonzalez until yeah. just this moment, so thanks.
You blocked that out of your memory.
Yeah, Jose Reyes on the team as well and getting way too many at bats. I'll never block that out of my memory, unfortunately.
And like, Cano is not Jose Reyes. Like, they're in like two different stratospheres. So, like, even though like they do have veterans, like, it's veterans who can contribute and not Jose Reyes.
Right. And I mean, the bench still isn't super great, but I feel much better about the bench this year than last year, because instead of a guy like Jose Reyes, we have, you know, JD Davis, which, you know, last the last game, defensively notwithstanding, he's actually a threat off the bench as a pinch hitter.
He's still young, too. I didn't realize how young he was. I mean, the trade aside, like, you gave up prospects for him, but, I mean, at least he's shown promise, at least. Like, you know, he was involved in the offense yesterday, and I think he was involved, you know, one of the other days he played. So he is a useful piece.
And for the perspective of trying to build a really flexible roster, not that any of us want this to happen, but JD Davis also has options. And,
yeah,
you know, I think that's partly why they're playing him so much now, is because he may go down when Todd Frazier is healthy. But while I would love for him to sort of make that a non-issue, mm-hmm. it also is sort of good to have that option, literally.
And it's, and isn't he the two-way player too, like eighth man in the bullpen maybe?
He theoretically can pitch. The Mets,
I mean, I can theoretically pitch, Allison.
Fact. But he can pitch, but the Mets have said that pretty unequivocally that they are not going to use him in that role unless it's an emergency. I mean, if we're in a situation where a position player is going to pitch, it's probably going to be him. But, you know, it's not going to be in a situation other than when a position player would normally pitch. So, however, you know, it exists.
Stranger things have happened.
Yeah, stranger things have happened. And, you know, but the bullpen, I feel good about it. I mean, you know, Edwin Diaz was a little bit of an adventure for the first time yesterday. But I still, you know, someone said it's an April Fool's joke. He just loaded the bases for fun. And then was just like, and we're done with this.
Relievers are a weird bunch. I would not be surprised if he did.
Yeah. Yeah,
especially with it not being a save situation, too. It just seemed weird. But yeah. You know what? Then he came back with 3 strikeouts and it was all good. So
it feels really nice to just have a shutdown closer. And, yeah. You know, a guy who used to be our closer is our eighth inning guy now. It feels real nice to feel really good about the back end of that bullpen and feel like, you know, if DeGrom goes 7 or 8 innings, you can feel pretty good about the rest of the game.
Well, I love Diaz's quote, like, in the opener. He said at one point he turned to, you know, I think it was Familia or somebody in the bullpen, and he said, we're winning this game. Like, as soon as they scored the one run, he said, that's it, we're winning. And I was like, I like that confidence.
I love that. That's great. And I think one of the happiest sort of timelines to come out of this whole thing is that, you know, Dom Smith and Pete Alonso both made the team. Instead of, you know, it being this competitive atmosphere, they're lifting each other up and they're happy for each other's success. And that's the way a successful team should be. And Dom gave some fantastic quotes. I think it was to Tim Britton of The Athletic. He talked about, you know, the goal is to win the World Series. And both of us being successful is the most conducive to that goal. So I'm thrilled about it. And that's exactly the right type of mentality you want to have.
And their joy was just infectious in the dugout yesterday, too. Like, they just lit up when they saw each other. And, you know, the fans can feel that and feed off of that, too. And I'm sure if we're feeling it, the dugout's feeling it, too.
And it's nice that, like, despite what everybody, including myself, thought going in, there really is a spot for Dom on the team right now. And, you know, it's easy to sort of undersell the importance of the lefty bat off the bench,
mm-hmm.
except when you're the only lefty bat off the bench and a potential defensive replacement and getting a spot start here and there like he is today, which, like, I hate getting Big Pete out of the lineup, but also, Smith, you don't feel like you're putting your Z team out there. He's really earning the playing time that he's getting. So it's nice that it's not, that they're not really vying for playing time directly against each other, but that there are very natural, you know, good baseball kind of ways to bring them both in.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you know, the fact that I am pretty universally against the bunt aside, I think the Chili Davis approach has actually been pretty good so far. Like, the situational hitting has been strong. It's hard to deny that.
And going to the opposite field, too. They've been spraying the ball around to all fields.
Which beating is, the shift, you know, consistently.
That takes some skill, yeah.
Especially Dom. Dom's beating the shift consistently, and that's part of the reason he's been so successful so far, is, like, he's not really hitting for power right now. He's hitting, you know, kind of soft singles, which is fine, but he's beating the shift. That's why. He's finding holes.
He's hitting the opposite field. I think as he gets more comfortable in that approach, we're going to start to see him ramp up, you know, what he really did in the minors that worked for him, which was that doubles power.
Yeah.
So he's not going to hit 30 home runs in a season, but he might hit 30 doubles, and that's pretty valuable, especially coming from, you know, a part-time role player who can support the team in other ways.
And you don't need him to hit 30 home runs. You have Alonso for that, you have Cano for that, you have Conforto for that, so just get on base and see what happens from there.
Yeah, and we're going to need, you know, these role-playing types that the Mets have to be successful in order for this team to be successful. It's, you know, I feel even though it's, you know, it's a well-rounded roster is what I'll say. And that's the space where I feel better than last season, I think. It's a much more well-rounded roster with role players that are consistently good at what they do and can be, and if they're deployed properly, can make this, you know, a pretty good team. Pretty, pretty good.
Yeah, I totally agree. Because even Brody, you know, that was what he was preaching all year, was depth, you know. We can't have what ifs anymore. And, you know, he made that one of his goals. And I think he accomplished that with the guys he did bring in. Like, when Todd Frazier could potentially be a depth piece, like, you're doing pretty good. Like, if Lowry were healthy and Frazier went healthy, you know, Frazier could potentially be on the bench. And that's actually not a bad situation to find yourself in.
Precisely.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So kind of in this vein, we talked a little bit about, Maggie and I talked at the ARG, and I'll get more on the ARG later, but we talked about how, you know, who we think, you know, our dude is, aka the guy who's not necessarily getting all the, like, attention in the early going, a la Pete Alonso, but a guy who, under the radar is really key to the success of this team. And I asked you guys to each stew on that over the past few days. So, Linda, who is your dude?
My dude is Keon Broxton. And Juan Lagares kind of came in and put a big red nope on everything I was about to say. But
oh, come on, you know he's going to break something like tomorrow.
There was a scary moment yesterday.
X-rays were negative.
Yes, and he's back in there today, so I'm assuming he's okay.
Yes, it's
but
fine.
Like, I know Broxton hasn't really hit, like, when he has been in the majors. Like, I think he's, you know, he didn't play much at all last year for the Brewers. He only had 78 at bats, but he's 2 years younger than Lagares. He's shown more pop than Lagares. His defense is, you know, and probably not up to Lagares' standards, but it's still pretty solid. And he is a true center fielder, unlike Nimmo and Conforto. He's a right-handed bat to complement them. And he's a nice speed guy. Like, when he played on Sunday, he stole two bases. And the Mets have been lacking speed for quite a while now. And that could be another useful weapon to have as a pinch runner.
I love the potential he also brings for, like, the pinch runner into defensive replacement role. That's a really nice pairing to have at the end of a game, to be able to use one guy for both of those little boosts.
And I think they did that on opening day. I think they ended the game with Lagares in center and him in right. Like, that's a pretty stacked defensive outfield, especially in a tight ball game.
That requires Mickey Calloway to use the double switch properly.
Yes.
Jim Regelman, do your job. Help him.
Yeah, we'll put that bug in Mickey's ear.
Like, jeez.
But, you know, so I know you give up something with the bat, but, you know, he looked okay in spring. And the one game he did play, he was on base, I think at least twice, maybe even three times. So he does seem like a good depth piece to have. And even when everybody's healthy, like, you know, praying maybe even Cespedes comes back, like, at least you have him and you're not picking up like a Jose Bautista or yep. Austin Jackson. Like, you're not scouring.
You guys are killing me.
Yeah.
Those are things that happen, Maggie.
I repressed that stuff.
Things that happen. Like, to have an actual Major League Baseball player that you can put in there and when there's an injury instead of seeing who got cut last week, it's a nice feeling to have.
I think there's
maybe
a serious...
Maybe this time we get to cut the guys.
Yeah, that would be nice. And he also does have 16 adorable puppies, which works in his favor, too.
Hell yeah.
That is the correct number of adorable puppies. I would just like to...
Dogs better than no dogs every time.
And Starling Castro just went yard, so it's 5-2.
Crap. All right, Maggie, who's your dude?
So my dude, and I would just like to say that last year my dude was Brandon Nimmo, and that turned out pretty well. So I had to like think about who I was going to dispense my good luck to, unless it reverses this year for whatever reason, in which case I apologize. But I'm really pulling for Rosario, and I know, you know, he's had the hype before, but I think a couple of, you know, just not quite there yet years sort of took the bloom off the rose a little bit. But I think he's got a really solid season in him, ready to go. His bat has just started clicking the last couple of days. I think he got a double tonight, if I'm reading the box score correctly. But I just, you know, just kind of like Broxton, I love the different looks that he brings to the team. I think he is going to figure out that whole base stealing thing soon. He's got the raw speed that's great. He just has a tendency to pick the moments wrong, but that's something that can be taught. Like, that is a you know, learnable skill, but you can't teach someone's feet to move faster. So all that good stuff is like packed in his wiry little body. And I think this is going to be a really solid year. And he's 23. I mean, it's hard to, like, I'm thinking back to my personal peak, and 23 was probably pretty close to it. I could still like drink tequila and live. So, hoping for good things for Rosario. I think he's putting in a lot of time and work at it. So
I think his patience at the plate has gotten so much better. Like, he's not failing at everything. Like, he's trying to, you know, work out walk, and he's not swinging at bad pitches. He's not getting too jumpy in RBI situations. So I think that's key for him too.
Yeah, I think people, like you said, Maggie, he's 23. I think people forget that. So there were so many people like declaring him a bust in May of last year, and it's kind of like, calm down, everybody. Like, I know that, you know, when you
drew a walk tonight. I just noticed.
Okay.
Yay!
When you have the prospect type that he has, and when you've had success on elite prospects hitting immediately the way the Mets have, in the way of, like, you know, their pitching prospects that are now all in the rotation. You know, it's easy to forget that there is a learning curve, and these guys aren't always awesome right away. And sometimes it takes time. And sometimes, you know, they have to learn a little bit at the major league level, like Rosario has had to do. And I think that he is definitely due for a breakout year this year. And I think hopefully soon it will all come together finally. And he doesn't have to be, you know, Francisco Lindor to be valuable to the Mets. Like, just a 2.5-3 WAR shortstop is something that is hard to find. And if he can just be that would be fantastic. So I will wrap up this part of the show with talking about my dude, who is Seth Lugo. I think he is, you know, an underrated, perpetually underrated part of the Mets' success. Even though he did get, you know, a fair amount of attention last year, being the first year that he was, like, pretty much full-time in a bullpen role, and he excelled in that role, I still think he was underrated with how good he was.
He good.
Oh, he very good.
And, you know, given how otherwise, I guess, top-heavy our bullpen is, with the back end of being Diaz and Familia, you know, having another guy that you feel really confident in high leverage situations is huge, provided Mickey doesn't, you know, blow out his arm by the end of May by using him too much. Let's not do that, please. But I think it's, you know, this is the first year that Lugo hasn't stretched out as a starter at all in spring training. They intend to use him exclusively as a reliever, which you can debate whether that's the right decision, because one could definitely argue, and I would make this case, that he is, you know, one of the top five starting pitchers on the club. I don't think anyone's denying that. However, you know, his stuff plays up out of the bullpen. He can throw a lot more curveballs, which is his elite pitch. And he can, you know, maybe save his UCL. People keep forgetting he has a partially torn UCL. And the lighter workload combined with throwing more off-speed pitches and fewer fastballs, I think, is protective against, you know, that UCL fully blowing up, which we don't want. So I think it's, in that way, a good decision. And he's a key cog to this bullpen. If Lugo goes well, I think that the bullpen will go well. So that's my dude.
And also, like, I'm not happy about it, or if it's for sure yet, but the three batter minimum, like, you need him as a starter. He's used to getting both lefties and righties out, so that wouldn't be too much of an issue for him. Like, he can work a full inning, or he can even work multiple innings. So, I mean, even down the road, he could be even more useful to have that piece where you're not worried about, uh-oh, can I bring him in with all lefties coming up, or, you know, whatever the situation may be. He still gives you flexibility.
Well, I love a guy who can, he can come in and kind of be your fireman, because he's that good. Like, he's got the good stuff where you can bring him into, like, a bases loaded situation and feel reasonably confident in the outcome. But then also, he can stay in for another inning after putting out that fire. Like, he kind of, you know, gets you a reliever who can do both.
Yeah, get you a reliever who can do both.
I love that.
I think that's a good note to end this segment on. So we will move to our next segment for this week, which is the more general baseball segment. This week we're going to talk about Susan Waldman. So Laura Albanese, who is fantastic, and if you don't know of her work, I highly recommend you read her work at Newsday. She wrote a piece recently about Susan Waldman, the play-by-play broadcaster for the Yankees, and the abuse she's faced in her career. And I thought it would be a great thing in keeping with this show to talk about that piece. And, you know, it was, you know, I don't know about you two, but I read it and I was just, like, I sat at my computer. It was one of those pieces where I read it and I sat at my computer screen and kind of stared at it for 2 minutes just to process what I just read.
Yeah, I had to kind of come in and out of it for a while, because it's very raw. Like, they did not edit to soften the specifics of her experience. And it's also, I think what works so well in the article, and what I want to, like, praise Laura for doing, is that she uses so much of Waldman's own words, which can be a real gift for an article based on an interview, being able to kind of rely so much on the person's actual words. But that also sort of gives it this immediacy, this just having it so closely personified, this, like, really just grotesque and scary experience that she had.
Yeah, like, for me, it was eye-opening. Like, you know, this was our lifetime. We were talking about this a little bit. And, you know, this wasn't, like, all that long ago that she was receiving death threats. And just for being a woman, like, she didn't do anything, like, awful. She just wanted to broadcast Yankee games. And she was getting death threats. And she was getting things sent in the mail to her. And, you know, that's that's horrifying and heartbreaking. And for her to keep going and to not give up and to open it up for the interview, Jessica Mendoza, and how, you know, she opened it up for all these other women and that she didn't give up. And, you know, how I can't even imagine how hard that must have been. Like, for me, I would have just been like, you know what, is this worth my life? Is this really what I want to be doing? Like, you know, but, you know, she persevered, and a lot of us wouldn't be here. Like, would we have this podcast if it wasn't for her? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. But she did give voice to a lot of people who probably wouldn't have voices in the game today.
And it's, I think it's great, Linda, that you you say her voice, because this is something that I don't know how aware a lot of men are, but the actual, like, our literal voices as women are something that that get a lot of criticism, like, mm-hmm. a disproportionate amount. And it's, I found that, like, people are much more willing to read something that a woman has written, but there's something about the voice. You hear people say things like, you know, it's like my mom lecturing me about baseball. There's something very, like, visceral about hearing a voice, and people get very upset about it. And I think the story, like, some of the stories that I've heard that are not to quite the same extent as what Waldman put up with, but similar scary things, they've happened to people like Julie DeCaro, who is a radio personality in Chicago. And I just think that there's something about the voice that feels very threatening to men who are inclined to be threatened by this kind of thing.
Well, you can ignore a byline, but when women are speaking up, you can't ignore that. Like,
exactly.
Yeah, we're here. You can't ignore us. And we have things to say. And, you know, that might be hard for some men to hear. But I also think it's also good for, you know, little girls to hear that voice too. Like, you know, if you just hear men all the time, you're going to think that's just how it is. It's going to be weird. But if, you know, they keep hearing women, then it kind of normalizes it. Like, oh yeah, I could do that too. Like, they did it, why can't I? But if you just see a certain segment or a certain population doing it over and over again, you're going to think, well, you know, that's just for them. That's not for me. And so to hear, you know, women in baseball, like, I think that's important for little girls to hear too, if they want to pursue this career, you know, even other male dominated things, you know, just say, hey, you know what, maybe I can do that. She did it, why can't I?
Representation matters. To hear to hear people who sound like you, to see people who look like mm-hmm. you in things that you love means a lot. And I don't think that people who have been historically, you know, have not been historically, you know, discriminated against in any fashion don't really get that, because they've always seen themselves in things. But, you know, even, and as we discussed, these Waldman incidents didn't occur that long ago. Like, this was in our lifetimes. This was not ancient history. And, you know, yes, we've made progress since then, but, like, there still aren't that many voices in baseball play-by-play broadcasting. There aren't female voices. There just aren't.
And for that matter, there are not a lot of voices of color either. We'll put that out there. And I think, like, you know, these are both groups that people get uncomfortable having in a position of authority.
Yep. Well, even Jessica Mendoza said after she does the Sunday night broadcast, she takes a break from Twitter for like a day and a half because she just can't read the reactions. So, I mean, it's still happening.
I mean, I don't blame her. I don't blame her at all.
No, and I don't either.
When she, you know, was hired by the Mets, and it was a great hire, you notice that all of a sudden, all the conflict of interest questions were coming out, whereas no one asked these things about A-Rod, and no one even asked these things about the other dudes the Mets hired who had the same conflict of interest literally, like, right before that. So it's amazing how all of a sudden, and, you know, they're legitimate concerns. I'm not trying to say that, you know, it's not a legitimate concern, but all of a sudden it's a pressing concern when it's her. And it's these things don't go unnoticed by female fans and by women that are following the team.
And it's these little things like being held to a higher, like a slightly higher standard, you might say, but it's those little things, they add up fast. So, you know, maybe Jessica Mendoza needs, you know, to impress some number of more people because 5% of the people just don't like her voice. And then maybe now she also has people who are slightly more concerned about conflict of interest than they would be otherwise. These things add up. And over time, that's where you see women dropping out a lot. And, you know, it's funny, Allison, what it makes me think of a lot also is higher education in the sciences. Yes. where you have people, you know, women graduating from undergrad at like about the same proportion as men, but then fewer of them go to grad school and fewer of them finish grad school and fewer of them finish their doctorates and fewer of them go into higher ed and fewer of them get promoted. Like it's you know, a war of attrition against women. And it's a, you know, that career, it's a long career, and there are a lot of opportunities for just little chips away.
Yeah, I have talked about this on the site, and actually I really have been thinking for a while of writing a full-length piece about this, because I see so many, and I could do a whole pod about this. So I'll digress and not do a whole pod about it, but suffice it to say, I see a lot of similarities and parallels between the world of baseball and the world of academia. And how, you know, my graduate program is majority female, but I could count the number of female professors in my department on one hand. And
yeah, and you know, I work in a public health grad school and I see the exact same thing.
And, you know, there are so many women now who are, you know, getting into, you know, baseball front offices at the intern level and, you know, writing about baseball, but there still hasn't been a female general manager. So, like, it's the same pattern of the higher you go up, the fewer women there are. They're getting in the door, but they're either being pushed out of the door once they're in it, or they're just kind of wandering out on their own because they're like, I don't feel supported here. And that's a problem.
And then also, it's like, you know, like the Wilpons, like, are they bringing in women just to save face, or are they doing it out of the sincerity and like really trying to push, you know, being more supportive of women? And they don't have the best track record when it comes to that. But
certainly not.
Like, so, and then there's always gonna be the questions like, oh, they only did it just because she's a woman. Like, no, that's not helpful either. Like, you need to be supportive when you're interviewing them. Like, say, no, she's super qualified, you know, she kicked ass when she came in the interview, not just, oh, she wasn't right for us. Like, no, we'll say, hey, you know, why did you hire her? Why did you bring in Jessica Mendoza? What were her qualifications? And
that's just another little challenge that women in these positions have to deal with is nobody ever looks at a man and wonders, did he only get that position because he was a man? Like, that just would never occur to anyone. And it, you know, and that's not the same thing. Like, having that, like, wondering that is not the same thing as calling it a death threat to Susan Waldman. But they both end up dragging you down, you know, in very, very different quantities, I mean, but but they're both impediments.
And they're both born of the same toxic mentality of, this is my space and she's invading my space.
Yes.
Yeah, you don't belong. Exactly. Yeah.
You don't belong here. This is our space. Baseball is a man's game, is a white man's game. And it's still, you know, so even if the, you know, sexism and the racism isn't out in the open, although sometimes it is, but in, you know, the overwhelming majority of the cases now, it's more subtle, but it's still there, and baseball is still a white man's game, overwhelmingly so these days, especially in the booth, in the front office.
I was just going to say that the booth is a big problem. It's all former players who have certain views of the world, and, you know, I mean, they don't like today's game, but then how they criticize, you know, Yasiel Puig and Manny Machado, and, you know, they put it under the curtain of, oh, like, we back in my day, we hustled. But really, did you always hustle 100%? Like, well, or is it there certain things about that player you don't like?
Well, when there are more women in the booth, we're going to hear a lot more about domestic violence, for example, because there's just a different perspective to have there.
And I mean,
yeah, maybe speak out about it instead of siding with the player. And maybe that could be a start.
I'm just shrugging it off and saying he's got to, you know, it's something he's got to work on, like making it sort of this very dehumanized, like, oh, it's something that happened to him and not something that happened to her.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. Not something he did to her.
Right. Exactly.
Something
yeah.
that happened, you know? And it baseball constantly struggles with how do we attract young people to the game? How do we widen our audience? This is how. Bring more perspectives into the damn booth. Because when all you're listening to is old white men talking about how good the game used to be back in my day, that's not how you're going to get new fans excited about the game. You get new fans excited about the game by bringing in diverse voices. It seems pretty easy to me, but, you know, what the hell do I know? I'm just a lady.
But what about the shift? The
we
shift
just have
is
a
really
podcast.
Just like baseball.
So, yes, this, you know, Susan Waldman, the Susan Waldman piece from Laura was shocking. And I mean, in some ways it wasn't shocking, in a lot of ways it wasn't shocking, but it's still reading those things and having them hit you and having her say them in her own words was still incredibly impactful. And, you know, I hope that we'll be reading more pieces like this and featuring them on the show. Cause we're going to try to, you know, feature the work of female writers, writers of color, that we like, who write great things about baseball, LGBTQ writers, all sorts of writers who are non-cis white dudes. So we're going to try to feature those pieces in that work. So look out for more segments like this in the future. But, you know, we talk about heady topics on this podcast, and we talk about heavy stuff, and we're ready to tackle it head on, but we like to finish every show on a happy note. So now I'm going to bring you our walk-off win segment, where each of us talks about what is making us happy this week, baseball or otherwise. So Maggie, let's start with you. What is your walk-off win for this week?
My walk-off win for this week was Alex Bregman tweeted yesterday that he, yesterday being Monday, that he is acknowledging Autism Awareness Month by donating for every home run he hits to his own charity, AB for Baseball, which is, it's a autism awareness charity. And it's just a really like great, he's a total mensch and always has been. Like, this is not, it's not news that Alex Bregman is fabulous, but it's great that he's using his profile to bring awareness to this issue. April is Autism Awareness Month. People very, very close to my heart are autistic, and I would just encourage everyone to take some time this month to find out just all the like wonderful people out there who are autistic and the fascinating, like loving, amazing things that they do. And I would also suggest that if anybody wants to donate, that a really wonderful organization, in addition to Alex Bregman's, is also the Autism Self-Advocacy Network. So that's a great group. Alex Bregman is a mensch. Autistic people are amazing. And, you know, that's it. That's my walk-off win. Yay, Alex Bregman.
Yay. Look up causes that are important to you and donate to those causes if you have spare money or even spare time. Lots of charities take volunteers. So even if you don't feel like you have monetary resources to give, there is always time and effort to give.
This is absolutely true.
Yes, that's very important.
Linda, what is your walk-off win for this week?
Well, kind of keeping with our theme, I saw Captain Marvel over the weekend, and I absolutely loved it. Especially the 90s soundtrack. You can take the girl out of the 90s, but you can't take the 90s out of the girl.
Damn right.
But like I said, kind of going back to the piece, like, it didn't feel like they did it just to do it. Like, oh, here's your female superhero now, you know, move it along. Like, Brie Larson was just totally badass. Like, but she was also vulnerable, and you know, that's important. Like, it's not one or the other. You can't, don't have to be badass or vulnerable. Like, women are both. So I really thought that was well done. I thought she did a good job. I liked her banter with Samuel Jackson. I thought they had good chemistry, like, overall. And I thought it was just a good message for girls, again, to see, you know, the superhero on the screen that's like them. And so, and also, there was a totally awesome cat in it, too. Goose. Goose was definitely a standout from the movie, so.
Heck yeah.
I am so, pro cats in films.
Yes. Way to go, Goose. So that's, I loved it. I recommend everybody go see it. And even that, like, all the fanboys were trashing it even before it came out. So even that, like, you can't even have. But I'm glad that, you know, it ended up doing well. And it kind of, like, showed, like, yeah, hell yeah. Women can be superheroes, and we're here, and we're awesome. And I can't wait to see what the Avengers brings, too. Which has a City Field cameo, so I'm definitely going to be seeing that, too.
I am pro anything that makes the edgelords and fanboys mad. So, I'll conclude with my walk-off win for this week. So I mentioned earlier that Maggie and I hung out at the ARG, which stands for Amazing Avenue Regional Gathering here. ARG. We all, on last Saturday, went to McKellar to watch the Mets take on the Nationals. A bunch of us Amazing Avenue folks gathered there. Linda, unfortunately, had to work, library life.
sad times.
But my walk-off win is just how much fun I had at the ARG and how, you know, grateful I am for this community. And I'm not going to gush on and on about Amazing Avenue all night, even though I could. But, you know, as a person who, you know, was a grad student, I moved away from home when I started grad school. I started reading Amazing Avenue maybe 2013, 2014, thereabouts. And, you know, I don't have a lot of people in my life, my day-to-day life, to talk about the Mets with. And it's one of my biggest passions. And it's hard when you don't have people around to share that passion with. And Amazing Avenue took me in and gave me a community. And during the awesome run of 2015, I finally started, like, commenting and participating in the site. And then not too long after that, I was writing. And now here I am. And so it's just, you know, it's so nice that this place and these people have given me a community. And I don't just consider all these Amazing Avenue folks my colleagues. I consider them my friends. And it's been such a wild ride to go from, you know, a sad, lonely grad student who doesn't want to people to talk about the Mets with on the internet to having, like, all these new friends. It's just been wild, and it makes me so happy. And being able to do this thing once a year where you actually get to hang out in real life, have some beers, meet each other's families. It's just been, you know, it's been great, and I had a really great time. So that's my walk-off win for this week, is how fantastic the Amazing Avenue community is. So,
and yes, I just wanted to add, we talked very, very briefly about preliminary thoughts around a podcast, hangout, meetup, whatever. So hopefully all of our listeners will be able to get involved in that soon.
That would be super fun. And I would love to make that happen. And we had something akin to that when we did the 300th episode of Amazing Avenue Audio before we split off into these new shows. And that was super, super fun getting to record a live podcast. So maybe look out for that from us sometime in the future. That would be really fun to be able to get together and do that. So hopefully we can make that happen for you guys sometime in the future. But for now, thank you guys so, so much for listening to the first official episode of A Pod of Their Own, episode number one. We're looking forward to being in your feeds every single Wednesday. Follow the show on Twitter, follow Amazing Avenue on Twitter, and get all of our great content. We're wrapping up a series on other extension candidates for the Mets, which might be a future podcast segment, so look out for that. We're doing recaps of the games every day now that the games have started up. So, you know, look out for all of that content. And don't forget, there is no crying in podcasting. And let's go, guys.